You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to Fly on the Call. Today I'm speaking with Jake, the bassist from the band Rot. Rot's music is fast, heavy, and political, so in many ways it's perfect for 2020. The band recently released their debut album As One through War Against Records. We discuss how that relationship started, self-producing the album, the band's message, and use of jarring samples. It's a great chat, so please enjoy.
How's it feel to finally have the album out?
Oh, that feels amazing. We had been working on it for a long time, so it feels really nice to have it out and actually see people enjoying it.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I know that it was, you know, self-produced and engineered and, you know, mixed and mastered, all that good stuff. Could you tell me a little bit about that process for you guys?
Yeah, so Harold and I actually used to work together in California at a studio. So we've both been engineering or audio engineering for probably 10 plus years. So we've always been pretty comfortable with it. But we pre-pro'd out pretty much everything, and there was far more than 10 songs at the end of the day. And we sat through and we kind of whittled through all of the pre-pro that we had made. Just sat on that for a little bit to really figure out what we thought was the best of the best material. And then we picked, at the end we were left with 10. 10 was never the goal, but that's what we were left with. But yeah, other than that, we actually tracked all of the drums in our practice, and everything else was done here at my house.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's probably becoming less and less true as, you know, time goes on and technology is getting, you know, better and everything. But I feel like there's still a little bit of a, you know, when you hear like self-produced, you're like, okay, well, maybe it won't be that good. But I really enjoy like the sound of the album. I feel like you like kind of really nailed down the sound very well.
No, thank you. Thank you. That's like the best and the worst thing about doing an album yourself is that you'll get met with, you know, well, they did it themselves, so they probably don't care that much about it. Or, you know, like if you're doing everything yourself, you can get caught into kind of a tunnel vision, and you can kind of lose track or lose sight of what the end goal really is. And having that extra person there, you know, going to like a larger studio or just having an outside engineer that's not in the band working on it can help a lot with that. But I think with how many times Harold and I have both done this for different bands that we've been in, I think we knew what our end goal was from the get-go, and I think we knew kind of how we wanted to tackle it. But yeah, it working on it ourselves was amazing and frustrating all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, what were kind of some of the things that you did to kind of like keep that objectivity and keep yourselves in check?
So it's easy to get lost in just like writing and writing and writing and writing. And it got to a point where we had probably like 15 or 16 tracks that we had to stop and say, okay, we need to actually look at all of these songs and stop writing for a second and maybe go back and polish some things on some other songs. Or it was pretty, for the longest time we were playing shows fairly consistently. So just making sure that songs we were playing live were as cohesive as possible. So there was always that drive of, okay, we want to get this record done so that we're able to play these songs live and actually have, you know, have people have that connection. So I think there was a lot of, we'll say, internal and external driving forces that kept us on track.
For sure. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, being a newer band, it's like kind of that special moment where you are able to like try these songs out live before you, you know, put them to tape. Like a lot of the, you know, bands that are more established will kind of not want to kind of like ruin that first experience of hearing the song.
Right. There's the idea of it has to be perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, what was kind of like the mentality as far as that went?
I think we just wanted to see, because, you know, there's a lot of parts in songs that you really like, and then you look at an entire song as a whole and you might be like, well, just because I like these parts doesn't mean that I necessarily think this song is great. But at the same time, you'd be doing yourself a disservice not to try it. So like, there's a few live sets of us playing a song that probably will never be recorded. It was just something that we figured, yeah, this is kind of fun to play. We'll see the reaction and we'll see kind of how we feel after playing it. Cause you know, you always have a different emotional connection to something like a song after you perform it live, just recording it or maybe just running through it in your practice space. So I think we just kind of looked at all of the songs objectively and just tried to say, okay, this is not the worst song ever, but it's not our greatest thing. So let's try and do something even better.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen you guys talk about before kind of the part of the mentality going into the band was, you know, kind of just play fast, show up and rock out and stuff. And, you know, for some of you, it was even supposed to be like a side project originally. When did that switch kind of flip and it turn into something more than that?
I think switch probably flipped. I want to say like mid 2019. We started seeing a big part of this band was, you know, all of our other bands are pretty, they're pretty set in their genre style. So you pretty much end up playing with the same style of bands all the time. So you'll get looked over for certain shows, even if you think that, you know, the crowd reaction may have been great. So we really wanted to make a band that we could say yes to whatever show and it wouldn't matter. And I think that helped a lot, but I think, yeah, I think it flipped about the middle of 2019. That's about when we all kind of saw that there was a want for this. People seemed to enjoy it. At the same time, a lot of our other bands were either slowing down or taking a break, playing shows to write more. So it just kind of all worked out really well for focus extra hard on Rot specific.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of mentioned the crowd reaction and stuff, and I'm curious, you know, with so many of the lyrics being like darker and more like politically charged, how do you kind of like find the difference or the balance between, you know, having fun and, you know, saying something meaningful, both for yourselves and like from a fan perspective?
Totally. I think a lot of it is just like we use this as an outlet more than anything. It's a way for us to get either our frustrations or just how we're feeling if we don't have quite the exact words to, you know, say to a friend and or what, you know, whatever. But I think that it really just is an outlet for all of us. And I think that in itself makes it fun for us, regardless if we're talking about, you know, current political climates or suicide or any very extreme topic. I think that it just allows us to have fun, because a lot of the times you look around and you just kind of think, wow, this is bad. This is all bad. So I think it's that it's almost a duality of it's meaningful, but that meaning makes us happy.
Yeah. I feel like there's such a release of like being at like a hardcore show. Like I can imagine there would be a release both playing it and, you know, being in the audience. What have Rot shows been like in the past?
A lot of times, honestly, and I'm never going to complain about this. It's a lot of people, being really attentive. We have a lot of people that will mosh or, you know, throw hands or whatever. But, most of the time it's people just very attentively watching. They're not on their phones. You know, and that's another thing is that I don't expect any reaction from anybody. I don't feel like I deserve a reaction or anything like that. So just to have people standing in the room, even if they're just standing still with like a cup of water, I'm stoked because they're giving me full attention for, you know, the 17 to 20 minutes that I get to do this. And that's really all I can ask for. But, you know, we get some rowdy times and some people that just want to go crazy. But Yeah, I'd say for the most part, it's just been really attentive. People just watching.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, I mean, it would be pretty hard to ignore a band as heavy as you guys do. and I also wanted to talk about kind of like the use of samples on the record, because, you know, some of them are pretty, you know, pretty much trigger warning material. And I know there was kind of some disagreement initially within the band as well about the use of them. Can you talk a little bit about them and kind of like what made them the right fits for the songs?
Yeah, so all of those samples were picked by Errol, and he goes down tons of like YouTube rabbit holes. And for like an example would be like on Spirit, the opening track, or the opening sample for that track, it's a 911 call, and it's horrible. It's just like, it just sounds evil through and through. But when he presented that, some of the guys were like, I don't know about that, man. That's that seems like shock for shock's sake. And he actually had to sit down and explain what his vision with the song was and where his lyrics were going to go. And I think after it was a lot easier for us to be on board with that, rather than it just being a, hey, here's a creepy sound clip for a heavy song, you know? And I think that was a big thing for all of the sound clips, is we wanted them to actually hold weight and not just be shock for shock's sake.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's kind of cliche to be like, oh, hardcore band, I couldn't understand a word they were saying, but which I don't feel is true of you guys, but I feel like, you know, those clips kind of serve as a way, like, okay, that gets my attention. And then it's like, okay, well, why did they use this? Let me listen to the lyrics now.
Right. It almost forces very intentive listening.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, one of the kind of like outlier on the album would be Empty Hope, which, you know, has kind of the more melodic vocals than anything else. How did that one kind of come together? And I mean, you mentioned like how you had so many more songs, like how did that kind of like end up making it through?
Yeah, so that one made it through mainly because I think we had so many fast songs and so many just kind of 100 miles an hour into the wall kind of songs. And I think putting a palate cleanser like Empty Hope on the album was, excuse me, a really wise decision, mainly because, you know, listening to 10 songs at 2 to 3.5 minutes that fast and that aggressive you can burn out pretty easily. I think it made it through because of the personal weight that it holds for Errol, and I think just the raw emotion that the instruments give in that song. We felt that even though it's slower and more melodic, we felt that it was just as heavy in its own respects as any of the other really like aggressive songs on the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did any of the songs that didn't end up making it, do any of those have, you know, either kind of a similar vibe or, you know, more so like a standout vibe compared to the other songs?
There's a couple of them, like one of them, they all have their, and I think this is mainly why they didn't make it, 'cause they all kind of have that, this sounds like this band, like kind of feel. So like one of them had like a Casey Jones feel, and the other one had like a Slayer intro, and none of them were really slow per se, like Empty Hope, or like as melodic as Empty Hope, but they were all kind of, I think they were just not really rot songs in themselves. They were more of just kind of rot writing a song that sounds kind of like.
How did you go about kind of keeping those influences in check during the writing process?
That's a weird one too, because we all five of us listen to such eclectic music across the board. And I think that at the end of the day, as long as we kept it fast and, you know, relative to punk, hardcore, metalcore in that big umbrella, we felt like we were pretty safe. I don't think we didn't really have like a formula, like it needs to have, you know, like a tom d beat part here for like pit crawls, and then it needs to like pick back up into circle pit type of thing. I think we were just writing for ourselves, and I think that's a big part of why it came out the way it did, and it has that, just the feeling that it does as we were writing for ourselves.
Yeah, I really love when stuff like that kind of shines through in the band. And it sounds like you were also kind of having sequencing in mind, which, you know, I'm very much an album person, so I always appreciate that. What was kind of like the mindset going into the sequencing of the album?
Oh man, I think we went through like six different like actual linear sequencing of the album, and I think the goal was pretty much always to start out with Overdrive. That never really moved, and Daggers was always meant to be the closer. I think the first iteration of the sequence at Daggers was actually track seven, but that ended up moving down, as we thought it was just a really nice way to end the album with a strong bow tie and just out really quick. But I think we sat and we listened and slowly started moving one song at a time until we felt like, as you listen to the album, your brain just kind of goes, yep, that's the album. You know, there's kind of that moment where one song flows into the next and into the next and into the next, and you stop almost paying to get lost in your own record. And that's when we were like, yep, that's the
awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I know I saw that the profits from the vinyl pressing are going to the Okra Project and We Love Lake Street. And could you just talk a little bit about your connection with those charities?
Yeah, so those charities were actually picked by we as a whole band. Harold brought basically gives resources and meals that are true to region to POC transitioning people. So we felt that right now it's already hard to be transitioning or a POC or both, and we feel like if there's any way that we can help somebody struggling or trying to just find the resources they need, a bed, or if they need to talk to a therapist, thing like that, the Okra Project is a great organization. And then we chose We Love Lake Street as our other organization because we actually wrote the album about 7 to 8 blocks from where George was murdered by the Minneapolis police. So being that close to everything, a lot of those shops that were destroyed, we actually were frequents at. You know, we would go eat at these shops and go actually spend money there because we lived so close, and that was our neighborhood at the time. So We Love Lake Street actually goes to putting money back into those business owners to rebuild and regain some of those lost money, for whether it's products or inventory or the actual building itself or payroll, whatever it is. But we felt like since that was so close to home, we wanted to actually let our music do the talking for that and actually see if we could help directly with our music.
Yeah, and I feel like that, you know, I think a lot of the songs kind of unintentionally, you know, are very fitting for 2020. And two of the ones that kind of stand out to me as, you know, most fitting, and they also feel like kind of like partner tracks in a way, are As One and Ask. You know, As One kind of holding people accountable for their indifference and acceptance of the status quo, and Ask kind of being like a call to action to work against that. Can you tell me a little bit about those two tracks?
Yeah. So As One was, I don't remember if it was, it's funny because Pressed and As One are tracks 3 and 4, and those were the third and fourth tracks we actually wrote. So I'm just trying to remember which one was first, but either way, As One was, we wrote really early on, and we wanted something that had, you know, that really upbeat kind of punky feel to it. And when we were done writing it instrumentally, Harold started putting lyrics together, and I remember one of the last, like he wrote one of the first lines he wrote was one of the last lines, and it's talking about melting, or like we all rot together in this melting pot. And I felt immediately when he put that down, I was like, yeah, I know where this is going and I'm very on board for it. So he basically fleshed that idea out, and Ask actually came a few songs later. And I think the goal with Ask was to be just a very straightforward song, nothing fancy per se. There's no like crazy licks or riffs in it. It's a pretty straightforward, just kind of knuckle dragger. And he actually wrote, he pitched the lines, speak, ask, think, react. And slowly we started working on, well, what do those four words mean to us? What do they actually, what's the weight that they hold to us? And slowly through working through all of those, the stanza in the beginning, I think Errol just kind of grabbed onto it and immediately started running with the idea that, you know, just cause you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. And it's really important to remember that, because, you know, just because you can't see it, there's things that are happening, you know, 50 miles from you that just because you can't see doesn't mean they're not happening. It doesn't have to be, you know, across the world. But that's a really easy way to get somebody's brain wrapped around that is, you know, look, there are people in other continents that are absolutely suffering and being taken advantage of by not only our government, but governments as well. So when we put it together, we knew that As One was either going to be track three or track four, and Ask we planned on having as track five to the closer of side A of the vinyl. But yeah, they just ended up together. And it goes back to that feeling of, you know, these tracks feel right next to each other. They feel proper.
Sure, yeah. And I'm curious, have you noticed people kind of like taking some of the lyrics to heart, or like connecting to them in ways you didn't expect?
We haven't had anybody specifically reach out to us and be like, hey, you know, I had a big, you know, eye-opening moment because of this song or what have you. But I wouldn't be surprised if, even, you know, there's got to be somebody out there that heard it, and even if it was for a split second, they maybe had that thought in their head of, oh, you know, this is a new realization for me, or this is a new eye-opening moment of something that I hadn't thought about, or had something that hadn't been presented to me. So while it hasn't been explicitly brought to us, I wouldn't put it past it happening.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, the album's out on War Against Records, and I'm just kind of curious how that relationship started and formed.
Yeah. So we wrote our first two songs on the demo for Rot, Nothing's Changed, two songs on it, and Coming to, and we had finished writing those pretty much, they were pretty much complete. And I think that we were just trying to flesh out how we wanted to put these songs out as a brand new band. And there was another band that I had found fairly recently to that time, called Pressure Cracks. And it's actually the head of War Against Records plays bass in Pressure Cracks. And they were the first band to be put out on the label. So that's how I found the label, because I thought that band was awesome. And after listening to their lyrics and the message that they were putting across, seemed pretty fitting to the message we were trying to convey. And I think at that time we kind of felt like, well, if the label is putting this band out, they probably also share those same views and those same beliefs, because people rarely put money behind things, kind of the way capitalism works. So we ended up talking to him for a while. I actually messaged the label's email while I was at work one day, and I really wasn't expecting an answer back. It was just kind of like, a you know, if I get no response, I'm in the same place I was 5 seconds ago. If I get a no, I'm in the same place I was 5 seconds ago. And if I get a yes, I'm much better than I was 5 seconds ago, you know? So I just sent it out as like a, you know, who knows what'll happen here. And he actually, Ryan actually responded back and said that he actually was really into the tracks. He thought they were great songs and wanted to release music under his label. So we ended up just working that out. And he's been an awesome guy. He's always been in our corner. He's really quick to be understanding, and he's also just an awesome business guy. So he's just really smart at helping us make good decisions. And you know, while we may think something is a great idea, he may think there's a better path to that idea. But yeah, he's just been nothing but a great partner and someone we're just so happy to have on our team.
For sure. Yeah. I think like that's super important. And I love that, you know, you kind of connected it over that, like the message behind the music instead of just like, oh, like this song sounds good or whatever.
Right. Or like, you know, the part, like, you know, we could have easily just been like, yo, we'll guaranteed sell 1,000 records or whatever, you know, like some bullshit. And you know, that's what a label is looking for, is just, can you sell records? We don't care what you say. We don't care what you stand for. Like, can you make us money? But he hasn't been worried about that since day one. So it's just really cool to see the positive growth between both of us just from believing the bands and the messages.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I'm curious, you mentioned like that it's been really helpful as far as like, you know, business decisions and stuff. What have been some of the like, you know, road bumps or whatever in the way that they've kind of like that you've been able to navigate successfully?
Yeah. So Ryan actually called me one day at work. We're trying to cement in our some of the like the publication, like website publications for like the releases, the week of the release. And for Spirit, the original idea was for the music video to have a cell phone, or not a cell phone, but like an old like rotary dial phone, and a couple other. And he called me and he said, hey, I think we should leave the sample out for the single version. And it goes back to what you brought up, is a kind of jarring and triggering. And he brought up the fact that, you know, you only have maybe 10 seconds at best to get someone on your team, get someone on board with whatever you're trying to get them to listen to or see, experience. So he said, you know, we've got like 15, 20 seconds of really intense, really graphic sample. And that could turn a lot of people away really quickly, because, you know, they have no idea that, you know, that holds a bigger meaning, or that, you know, they're not interested past that point. So he brought that to our attention. And at first I was like, oh, I want to say I don't understand this, because, you know, of course I want the sample in there, but it made so much sense that it was impossible to be like, you know what, we're leaving it. So we took it out for the sample or the single version. And I think it was the right call. I think it was a smart move. And I think that it did help the reaction later to people hearing the sample on the album.
Yeah, they were a little more kind of like open to it in a way.
Right. They already expected and knew what the song was and was about. So I think just having that little extra piece, especially as a surprise to something that they're already familiar with, I think it helped a lot.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I always like to kind of wrap up by asking for either just like a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately that, you know, you kind of either wanted to get off your chest or you think might help whoever's listening.
Yeah. So a big thing that I've been working on recently is I get overwhelmed by all the tasks I have in front of me. I have 3 bands and 2 dogs and a girlfriend, and I work a 40-hour a week work job. And, you know, it can get pretty crazy. But I've been recently trying to focus on one task. I know it sounds really stupid, but oftentimes my brain, I don't know if anybody else is like this, but my brain can get really wrapped up in the thought of all of the tasks that I have to achieve or get done, or that I'm obligated to do before a certain set date or set time. So I've been working really hard on just focusing on one task at a time. And as soon as that task is done, I'll move on to the next one. And I know that sounds really stupid and really obvious, but if you can slow your brain down for just a second, it can really help you. And I think that also applies to, you know, just decision making. Just focus on that one decision that you have right now, and then move on to. I think that'll help with it's slowly been helping with a lot of my anxieties. So I don't know if anybody else suffers from that or it applies to them. So if it does, give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much describes very well what I've been dealing with today. So it was definitely helpful for me. And yeah, I mean, was there anything else about the album that you've kind of been itching to get out that we haven't hit on?
We're working on a bunch of stuff. We've got, we're working on another music video. We're working on some new merch that should be coming out before the end of the year. Ideally, Alex and I have been messing around with making Guitar Hero charts for the songs. We're just kind of taking it piece by piece, doing the whole one task at a time thing. I believe Errol is working on some track commentary. So people will be able to hear kind of exactly what was going on in his head while he was writing and just kind of what the overall idea was. And yeah, just kind of watching the social and the political climate, see, you know, if, when things will be safe to play a show again. And we also are working on a live stream set. So there's a bunch of stuff in the works. We're trying to keep our feet moving.
I don't know about you, but I think that album commentary sounds uniquely perfect for a band like Rot. If you haven't already heard As One, give it a listen, and I think you'll definitely agree. The vinyl pressing of the album just came in yesterday and is shipping out now, so if you like what you hear, be sure to pick up a copy. And check out both the Okra Project and We Love Lake Street, two organizations that are certainly worth your support. Find the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FindTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at findthecallpod@gmail.com. Have a great week, and don't forget to vote.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.